Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hour number two on this freezing Wednesday afternoon. Chad Hartman, Adam Carter, Dan Cook, News Talk 830 WCCO. World-renowned epidemiologist, loyal to the show for almost 20 years, Dr. Michael Osterholm makes his regular appearance. You have a question for the doctor. I will take a look at all those. Text away, 651-461-9226. Mike, it is always a pleasure. Let's see how we can look at this. You love baseball. For a while, we were talking about what inning we're in. Then you switch to football, and we talked about what quarter we're in. I could also, and a friend of mine pointed this out, I could also ask where are we at right now in the virtual blizzard? How can we get your analysis on where we're at with COVID? Pick any metaphor you would like to use.
Well, thank you very much, Chad, for having me. Good to be with you again today. Let me start with the latter one, with the blizzard. As we've been talking for the last 5 weeks on here, you know, I thought we were going to have this global viral blizzard. Clearly in the United States, it was going to take off, which is done. And just like a real storm track for a snow blizzard, those areas that have been hit first saw the major impact, case numbers rise dramatically. And then we're now seeing it on the downside in places like the Northeast, some degree potentially in California. And I think that those numbers are going to keep coming down. Now, the challenge is we don't know how far they'll come back down. When you look at, for example, a country like South Africa, which is surely a limited experience, but if you look at the surge that went up very quickly and very high and then came down quickly, that is still running about 16 to 18 times higher cases now than it did before the surge started. So there's a tail on that kind of backside of the curve that we don't know when it will come down or how much it will come down. And there are still substantial cases occurring in that tail. So I think if you extrapolate that to the United States, and specifically let's look at Minnesota, I think Minnesota really is about probably 2 to 3 weeks away from, you know, hitting that peak and starting to come down. And then, as I said, there's going to be that tail on the backside of it. So I think that's going to happen around the world. It is, in fact, it is happening around the world. It's happening in Northern Hemisphere countries, the Southern Hemisphere countries. No evidence that this is a season-related virus, even though some have alluded to that recently. You know, it's just as bad in the Southern Hemisphere in their middle of their summer. And I think once Omicron basically goes through this surge, we probably will have a period of time where it's going to be relatively minimal transmission, minimal cases. It reminds me almost where we were last May and June, when people thought we were all done with the pandemic and, you know, we moved on. Adding a footnote to that, that's where I think when you ask me which inning or which quarter or God knows whatever we're in, one of the challenges we have is that we don't know that we're not going to see another variant that's going to arise. You know, one that could evade the immune protection of what vaccines we have now, the current immunity we get from being naturally infected right now, and could very easily be just as transmissible. You know, unlike influenza, for example, once it crosses over into humans, it's only humans that keep that virus going in terms of the changes from a pandemic to a seasonal strain. What we're seeing now is we're infecting lots of animal species with human SARS-CoV-2, the causative virus for COVID, and we don't know that they're not going to spill it back. You and I have talked about the white-tailed deer as an example. Right now, there's a sizable outbreak in Hong Kong tied to hamsters and people. And so I think that that's the challenge we have, is will we see a new variant come back that's going to challenge our protection?
Okay, so you gave us so much information. Let me try to pick out a couple of these items. First of all, you believe here in Minnesota that the peak is 2-3 weeks away. You know the Mayo Clinic came out yesterday saying they believe from their analysis that the peak could come as early as Saturday or as late as February 1st. For somebody who's listening and has immense respect for you and the Mayo Clinic, how do they try to decipher that the two of you are at least a week or two apart?
Well, you know, if you're going to start splitting a week on this one, that's like kind of answering how many angels can dance in the head of a pit. Okay?
Yeah.
The precision around that is just impossible. I mean, whether it's 1 week or 2 weeks. Now, if we were 6 or 12 months off, then that's a difference. Okay? And so yeah. I think that it's really a function of looking at the peak, because it's also not occurring equally through the state at the same time. You know, we have areas of the state, particularly in greater Minnesota, where we may be off a week or two from where we are in the Twin Cities. And so it's still that blizzard kind of concept that, you know, it's going to take off. So I don't see any daylight between what the Mayo Clinic said and I'm saying.
Okay. On another variant, Delta has led to Omicron.
Actually, you know,
knowing that we are slowly but surely getting...
It has not led to Omicron. This is one of the important points, Chad, that really needs to be...
Okay, glad to clarify.
If you look at Omicron, it is tied to the ancestral strain that came from Wuhan. So if you look at the evolution of this virus, it wasn't like somebody got Delta and then more mutations occurred. This is a brand new virus that has been somewhere in somebody, some animal, some human, dating back to Wuhan. And so we call this the ancestral strain and the changes. And that's important because it also points out why a future virus that might emerge wouldn't at all be amenable to an Omicron-like vaccine. You know, people are having this discussion right now, should we have an Omicron vaccine? Our vaccines right now are based on the ancestral strain, one that gave us basically alpha and gave us beta and gamma, gave us delta, and gave us Omicron. And so that's really important to distinguish that, because it is about the vaccine. So we don't know that another ancestral strain dating back to Wuhan could be out there somewhere and mutationally change and get around the protection that Omicron or Delta has given us.
So are we ever going to know? I mean, is it possible that we get more people vaccinated, we have a good summer, and all of a sudden it's October, we're still talking, and guess what? Here's another variant that just pops up.
You know, I hope not, but hope's not a strategy. So we got to be prepared for whatever happens. You know, let me just give you a good example, because this happens to be, I think, one that hits home for Minnesotans. You know, I have such tremendous respect for the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport Fire Department. When you look at the skill set, the machines, the trucks, everything they have down there, it's really top deck. Okay? And we pay for that every day, because if one plane went down, you'd need them right now. Well, if you look, you know, the only plane crashes of major airplane size that have gone down in South Minneapolis, covered by the Minneapolis Fire Department back in the 40s and 50s. And we've never had a major plane crash on the reservation at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. But we wouldn't run that for a day without having that really outstanding fire department there, and they're well-funded. Well, I think in a sense, we hope it never happens. We hope we never need them in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, but we got to have them. And so what I'm suggesting is that we don't know that this new variant might not arise that could do as much damage, if not more, than Omicron does. So we got to be prepared for it. So I think the good news scenario is that we are trying to get there to that new normal. And that was, as you know, I was a co-author, and an article appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And since that time, some other op-eds in the Washington Post and New York Times saying this new normal is going to mean the following. We're going to need new and better vaccines. The vaccines we have right now are remarkable. They're very powerful, but they're not perfect. And one of the things we want to do is get immunity that might range across a whole number of variants that might emerge. And actually, our center at SIDRAP is leading an international effort right now to call what we call a pan-coronavirus vaccine roadmap. How are we going to get there? So I think with vaccines, you're going to get a lot better. There'll be 2.0, 3.0, 4.0 in the future. The second thing is the therapeutics. Remember, if you and I had had this conversation in 1980s, we'd be talking about HIV as a death sentence. Today, HIV can be a managed chronic disease because of the drugs that we have. Remarkable. And so one of the things I think you're going to see happening over the course of the next months is going to be a major concerted effort to get improved testing so we can tell right away if somebody's infected and get drugs to them if they are. And we can substantially reduce serious disease, hospitalizations, and deaths. So I don't see this as the same tools in months ahead that we have now dealing with this. And even if the new variants come back, if there's one that happens to happen, we can still address them much more effectively than we can address them now.
The president and the administration, and I'll editorialize because I've said this a lot, I think they're months and months late in providing the tests and the masks. I'm glad they're going out. I don't understand why they didn't come out sooner. If you want to chime in on that part, you can. I know many times you stay apolitical, but if you want to, let me know. But let me ask you this directly. The at-home tests that we're getting, that we started signing up for yesterday, and I hope everybody does, how accurate are they?
Well, if they're positive, you really have a very high likelihood that really you really are infected, okay? Doesn't necessarily tell you whether you're infectious, but it may be an indicator of that. If you're negative, it's unclear what it means. And, for example, a brand-new study just out this morning, it looks at this test in use in kids, and it goes back and reviews all the studies that were done in kids, and it found that it didn't work all that well in terms of telling you that this child was infected. This is what we call a false negative. And this is what I've been concerned about and have been pushing hard for the FDA to provide additional clarification. You know, they've had now for a better part of a month on their website that just says our data supports that the lateral flow test or the antigen test we're talking about are less sensitive in picking up Omicron. Well, what in the hell does that mean? You know, tell us. We need more information so we can inform people. If I'm going to go see Grandpa and Grandma tonight and they both are at risk of getting seriously ill, if in fact they get infected, I'm going to take a lateral flow test today, one of these tests we're talking about, and I want to know if I'm negative. Am I okay to go? Am I going to infect them? And right now I can't tell you that I know that. That to me is still unacceptable. And so we need to do a much better job on these tests, and I think that's going to be another major priority. But let me just go back and answer the question you asked, which you weren't sure I would, about the administration.
Yeah.
You know, I'll try to call spades a spade, okay? You know, when you look back and you're the official historian, you have all these interviews I've done with you for the last 2 years. You know, a year ago right now, I was not in the best stead with many of my colleagues because I said at that time, I thought that the darkest days of the pandemic could still be coming. And that was when case numbers were coming down dramatically from the January surge, vaccine was flowing, and it was all about the variants for me. I saw alpha, I saw, gamma, I saw beta emerge. I thought, you know, there's no reason that more variants are going to show up that could really have an impact on us, okay? Well, a lot of the world thought we were out of the soup. And even going into Delta, they didn't really believe this was going to happen, that this would take place. And so it's not just the United States. If you look at other countries in the world, the United Kingdom, which has been touted for having some of the best testing support in the world, has also been caught short, way short on testing. So I think what it really points out is that, you know, no one really was prepared for a Category 6 hurricane because we hadn't seen them before. Now we know you got to have that surge capacity. It's like the Minneapolis, St. Paul International Fire Department. You got to have it. If you don't have it, it'll cost you more than whatever it could cost to pay to have it. And so I think, you know, we don't have enough tests. We don't, and good tests. We don't have enough drugs. We don't have the masks out. You know, I've been such a strong supporter of N95 respirators for 2 years that could have saved a lot of lives if people would have used them, but the recommendations were a mess. Only now, in the last week, has CDC clarified that, and even then, they still are ambiguous. They say, use an N95, but use something that's comfortable that you can wear. Well, that's not
too ambiguous, right?
Well, very. Yeah. So I think at this point, let me just say we all have to take a step back and say, now's the time to recalibrate. What do we need to do going into the future? Let's hope that it's not going to be a big challenge. And we can live our life that way, and we'll plan for that. But we got to plan for that variant plane crash that could happen in our backyard. And we got to be ready again. We can't be like we have been.
You know, a lot of people talk about natural immunity and the options they have available to them if they were infected earlier from the original Delta. But I want to ask you now about Omicron. Because of Omicron and how pervasive it is, do you have any different feeling, every different data, any different conversation with doctors because of Omicron and the power of our own natural immunity at this point?
Well, I think the data are pretty clear and compelling. We have had many, many, many reinfections of people who have previously been infected with Alpha or Delta and who then subsequently got Omicron. Okay, so it's clearly pointing out that reinfection can occur, particularly with a new variant, and over time. You know, a waning immunity occurs with someone who has previously been infected, just like it does with somebody who's vaccinated. And so that's a challenge. The combination of the two, if you've been infected and you get your doses of vaccine, you probably have the best protection of anybody in our community. So, you know, again, this is not a political debate, nor should it be, and even though it's been made that, you know, clearly if you have had previous infection, you have some protection, but limited. And it may mean that you'll have less severe illness, but you surely can still get infected. I think that's going to be true for a new variant should it arise with Omicron. We don't know that the protection you get from Omicron is going to cover you for the new variant, particularly if it's 6 months from now where you may have some waning immunity. This is why we need new and even better vaccines that have durable protection. And that's, of course, one of the things we're working on right now.
I hear your voice. You sound a little different today. Are you okay yourself? Are you healthy?
Oh, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm a little hoarse. I've been talking too much, you know, and my kids can confirm that for you. I talk too much. I'm hoarse.
Just checking, sir. All right. Thanks, as always.
Thank you.
Well, you're not going to be quiet. I can tell you to be quiet, but you're not going to do that. So stay healthy, and we'll talk next week.
I will look forward to it, Chad. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thanks, Mike. We'll look at a lot of your texts. We worked in a number of them during that segment. You want to keep them coming on our conversation with Mike Ostrom, you can. 651-461-9226. Steely Dan brings it back 28 past 1. It is amazing, and I appreciate, and it's just factual. Everybody can't listen to every single Mike Ostrom interview. I wish you could. I do know one way you can, by the way. You can sign up and podcast the show, Odyssey.com, the Odyssey app. You can listen to the show hour by hour by hour. You want to pick out segments. So when this stupid app doesn't work, guess what? You've got what Dan does right away. In fact, I bet Dan already has the 12 o'clock hour up there. If you want to sign up for our show, Odyssey.com, the Odyssey app. And then you can pick and choose if you want to listen to Ask Adam Anything or Jamie Ukas. You don't want the entire hour. You listen to the entire hour, all 3 hours. That'd be great. Dirty little secret. You can listen quicker that way. Okay? But the mask conversation. Dan, you listen every single time. Mike Osterholm. And we've talked mask on this show. We've talked more mask on this show than any topic probably. And for how long? Since last year, late in 2020, Mike Ostrom has been saying N95 masks are the way to go. And we've had a lot of questions about cloth masks. And yes, cloth masks are better than nothing, but there's no comparison between N95 masks, which is why this administration, the Biden administration, is so derelict in getting these out so late. And I thought he was really good today on the needed improvements in testing and what we do, because I signed up right away to get the at-home test. Dan, did you sign up yesterday to get the?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
How long did it take you? 30 seconds?
Oh, the sign-up. Yeah, the sign-up is super easy. I'm cautiously waiting to see how long it actually takes these things to get here.
100%. But yeah, so are they helpful? For sure. Do we still have false, you know, negatives about it? Yeah. And Mike gave you a very lengthy answer. But I don't know how many months in a row he has been saying this. I mean, about N95 masks, and not just me calling out the CDC. The CDC, again, Biden administration, too vague on the differences between N95 masks and cloth masks. They're covering their butts. They talked about competency. We saw the previous administration, Donald Trump, looking us in the eye and lying or saying nonsense about a hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and shooting stuff in your veins. And Biden's administration will be, hold our beer. We got it. And in some areas early in the administration, they did. Not lately. Not lately at all. And that's why, in fact, guess what? It's going to be our lead item coming up right now. Playing Politics with the Star Tribune editorial board, which comes after the traffic update, and there'll be basically nothing going on because it's the middle of the day, and there hardly ever is anything going on, but we can make money on it. And then the chilly weather forecast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Time for the collaboration between WCCO Radio and the Star Tribune editorial board. This has been taking place for a number of years. Today, represented John Rash, always here. Denise Johnson here today with John. Glad to have you both on, as always. Denise, I will start with you first. Joe Biden is going to do something which he is, so far, he's rarely done during his presidency, have a solo, organized, planned press conference, starting about when this show finishes up. I think many observers, I'm in that category, look at the last 6 months and see many areas where the administration, to be kind, has struggled, or to be blunt, has failed. A lot of polling reflects the same thing. What can Joe Biden say today to Democrats who want more and to independents who want more to give them some confidence that things are going to turn to the brighter side for the Biden administration over the next few months?
Well, can emphasize some of the things that have gone well during his administration, and it can also push very hard for additional bipartisanship. As you know, the Voting Rights Act is coming up or it's being debated as we speak, and it's not likely that will pass, but emphasizing things like going back kind of to the drawing board on that, or looking at the things that both sides can agree on and get something passed in that area would be something that perhaps could give people more confidence going forward.
John, same question to you.
I concur with Denise that bipartisanship is what he should move toward, because that's what he ran on. And he came into the presidency as a uniter after the deeply divisive years under President Trump, and certainly before that under Democratic presidents as well. And the early months of his administration seemed to deliver on that, as Denise rightly mentioned, capped by what literally is called the bipartisan infrastructure plan. And so you did have several Senate votes come from the Republican side as well as from the House side. That's a model of the way that Senator Biden used to like to work. As candidate Biden, he said he would work, but as president, it hasn't worked out well for him, save for a few bills. He has a very slender majority in the Senate, one vote with Vice President Kamala Harris, and clearly he has defections to the point where on the voting rights bill, it can actually be the Republican side who say they have a bipartisan coalition stopping it because they have the two defections in Senators Sinema and Manchin. So President Biden needs to go back to these bipartisan roots that he knows well and that are authentic to him in order to get his administration back on track.
So, John, that's something where I thought he would have greater success, and he obviously has not of late. I saw a number of interviews previewing 1 year and previewing this interview, and I saw a number of folks who are further to the left than Joe Biden, including supporters of Bernie Sanders, who say that isn't working. They say, you know what, Joe Biden is trying to reach out and no Republicans are there outside infrastructure, that Sinema and Manchin aren't there, and that Joe Biden should look at the energy within the Democrats Party, which is further to the left, embrace those ideas, and try to get more things done in that manner. Is there any chance he pursues that route?
He certainly may be pushed toward that direction, and Senator Sanders, Warren, and others want him to go that way. But let's just look at Senator Sanders' record regarding West Virginia. Joe Manchin has given them this slim one-vote majority with the vice president's vote, partly because Joe Manchin has resisted pressures to join the Republican Party. When Senator Sanders pushed a more liberal candidate in the West Virginia Senate race against the other Republican incumbent there, that individual was trounced, and President Trump had the widest margin of victory in West Virginia of any state that he ran in. So, you know, the Democratic Party has long been a broad coalition. It certainly is that right now, and you've got to work within that. And also, I think that one of the lost opportunities are there are some relatively more moderate members of the Republican Senate, Senators Romney as an example, or Collins of Maine, or Senator Murkowski of Alaska, who he could work with as well and try to build a bit of a broader coalition that's going to take more moderate legislation. Moving to the left clearly hasn't done it, and there's nothing that would suggest it will do it. And indeed, as the midterms come up and polls indicate that it's highly likely that the Republicans will re-grab control of Congress, he better learn to start working on a more bipartisan basis.
All right, Denise, same to you on potentially tacking the laugh, but also this point, too. Many people have suggested whether it's Build Back Better or parts of the Voting Rights Act, which is going to get voted down because Sinema and Manchin aren't going to vote yes. That one option is you break the bills apart separately, not together, but you break the bills apart separately, find ways to work with Manchin, Collins, other Republicans, and try to get things done. Which is the more likely path that Biden is going to pursue?
Well, I think that's the one that you just mentioned is the path he ought to pursue. Moving farther to the left, I don't think, I mean, to the kind of extreme left is certainly not going to work. I think one of the things that the president found when he was trying to rely on some of the relationships that he had had as a longtime member of the Senate and thought that he would be able to talk with those people that he had worked with in the past. And what he's working with now, those same senators, you know, when you look at the ones who are the 17 that voted again on the Voting Rights Act in 2006, voted one way, and now they're not. And that's sort of the introduction of Trumpism into all of this that's made a change in the people that he was kind of relying on to be able to work with in that party. So I still think that the partisanship looking for those moderates in both parties to work with him on getting parts of these things passed is the way to go.
Denise Johnson and John Rash here from the Star Tribune editorial board. It's 2:46. Let's pause right here. Come back. I want to talk locally, Governor Walz and bonding, and also something, because there are a lot of people who support former President Trump and say, it's old news. This is new news on President Trump from last night and his family. How significant is this story? Those items when we come back. Back with the Star Tribune editorial board. Donald Trump and his family in the news. The New York Attorney General said investigations have uncovered evidence the former president's company used fraudulent or misleading valuations of his golf club, skyscrapers, and other property to get loans and tax benefits. Attorney General Letitia Johnson late yesterday told a judge they have not decided whether to bring a lawsuit in connection with the allegations, but the investigators should be allowed to question Trump and his two eldest children under oath as part of the civil probe. The Trump Organization issued a statement Wednesday calling the investigation baseless and politically motivated. Where does this go, John Rash?
It goes into the mix of things going on in the political world that are deeply dividing the country. But on the merits of the case, again, as you mentioned, it's a civil, not a criminal case. And if President Trump's attorney is correct in that there is nothing to this that is, as you call it, baseless, or as he called it, baseless, then the president and his two adult children should answer the questions. It's going to be difficult to dodge a subpoena in this case. And I think that they would serve themselves much more by voluntarily going in to talk as it has been requested at this point. And I think trying to push off something that may be a serious allegation of financial fraud on being politically motivated is not appropriate and not accurate. The facts are the facts. And I think that if indeed there's nothing to it, as the president's attorney alleges, they should feel comfortable going in and answering questions.
Denise, don't you expect what's going to happen is they're going to go in and say no comment?
That's right. That's exactly what they will. They will go in and say that they don't. The Trump and his family members have always felt as if they don't have to comply with those kinds of things. There's plenty of cases, you know, over and over again. He and people in his circle have said, we're just not going to do it. You're just not going to participate, and we'll do whatever they can to hold that up legally as the attorney general is trying to pursue it.
Let's switch here to what's taking place in Minnesota with Governor Walz and the figure of $2.7 billion as his bonding number that he has offered up. Denise, is this a realistic number, or is this we're just opening up negotiations and we're setting number very, very high at this point?
I think we're opening negotiations. If you recall, the highest bonding bill that we've had in the past was at $1.9 billion in 2020. This time is looking for $2.7 billion. I would expect that they will end up somewhere in between those two figures. One of the things that the court is different this time around is that there is a great deal of federal money involved that can be helpful to drive this number up. If you look at the priorities that the governor has talked about, I think that there most people, most voters, could be in favor of many of those things. It's for the state university system, for housing, for local government requests, for infrastructure, bridge replacement. I think that those are the kinds of things that voters in Minnesota want to see this money spent on. But I don't know that the $2.7 billion will stand.
John, do we have any idea what is a more realistic number at this point?
I think Denise hit on it, $1.9 billion. There is a precedent for that, and that happened during another volatile political year, but these come around in even years. 2020 was the last time that they did this. Now, one could argue, and I'm sure the Waltz administration will, that they have more resources because of all the federal money that has been sent out because of the COVID crisis. But my sense is they'll get closer to 1.9, maybe up to 2 billion, which really has a different ring than 1.9 billion, perhaps, on the campaign trail. And Denise is quite right. They're quite strategic, both parties, when they do this, of spreading the money throughout different congressional districts, different state legislative districts. And generally, they're absolutely for needy projects, be it in higher education and just maintenance of building at all the campuses of the university system and the Minnesota state system and other really worthy projects. That's why they generally can get this done despite the deep acrimony in St. Paul.
As always, thanks to both of you. Enjoy the week, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Chad.
Thank you, Chad.
John Rash and Denise Johnson from the Star Tribune editorial board. Follow us on Twitter. What are you waiting for? There's a, who knows, maybe you follow us on Twitter and $1,000 will just pop up in your pocket. At Chad Hartman Show, at Dan Cook, WCCO, at AC830. Next hour, early, our friend Rochelle Olson on potential media coverage for the federal trial of the three officers involved in the murder of George Floyd. And next hour, chance to win Wolves tickets right here on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.